These are the Target Files, taking a 21st century look back at the 20th century adventures of the Doctor in novelization and audiobook form, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, "There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time." Hello, welcome to episode 54 of Doctor Who Target Files podcast. This is Mike in Swansea.
And hello, this is Alex in Exeter.
Yes, a change of direction for us in the lead up to Christmas. We are going to be looking back at certain episodes from the Stephen Moffat era of Doctor Who, which started with his initial television episodes back in 2005, up to the present day as we approach the end of his era. So we ran a few little polls on Twitter, and we've taken a selection of the top three stories and the bottom three, unfortunately, and we're going to give you a hit and miss look at various Stephen Moffat stories within his era and reassess them, Al. Would you like to tell the listeners what two stories we are judging as a hit or miss today?
Well, we've got as the hit, the 50th anniversary episode, The Day of the Doctor, and we've got as the miss, the Christmas episode, I think from 2 years ago now, The Husbands of Riversong.
Yes, 2015, and we've decided today, Al, to start with what is seen as the greatest Doctor Who story by Doctor Who magazine poll a few years ago, the 50th anniversary episode. So your initial teaser thoughts, Al, as we go into discuss this one.
The Day of the Doctor is really, really good. But also they had that great, you know, little thing beforehand, or The Night of the Doctor with Paul McGann, and explained how he turned into the War Doctor, as we know now. He wasn't actually called the War Doctor, John Hurt. Just it again on Friday, because I hadn't seen it for a while. And because I got a 4K Ultra Blu-ray player in my living room, I thought I'd try it in 3D, which I don't normally do. And it stood out really well. It's got a really good story to it. It's, you know, sort of multi-Doctor stories. I know it can be a bit dry and don't work, but I think this one really works. And it's just really fantastic. It's good fun from start to finish. And it just makes you feel really good by the end. I really like it.
She first saw it on broadcast here at home in normal definition on the 23rd of November, 4 years ago this week, and went along with a few friends to the cinema for the 3D screening on the following day, the Sunday. Didn't feel it added too much at that size screen in 3D, but as you've just alluded to, I think it would probably work better on a TV screen.
Yeah, it does, because the bits where the 3D works best is definitely the sort of three-dimensional pictures. They really come out at you, they do. And the Cygons look really good in 3D as well, to be honest. They're quite red and nasty looking. So I think if it's too big, the screen, then it might not work. Well, I've got in my living room a 50-inch Panasonic, and it looks beautiful on that, but that's 4K as well. So I think it works well. But I think taking that away, you know, all the 3D and that, the story is really good in it, and the whole multi-doctors connecting works really well, I think.
Yes, interesting. In our last Target-based episode, we looked at the 20th anniversary, the Five Doctors, and I think Moffat really figured out the way to bring the multi-doctor story into the new era. Some criticism, perhaps, that he only used new series doctors. How do you feel about those sort of arguments, Al?
Well, I don't think it makes much difference, because there is the reference, you know, no spoilers, but if you haven't seen this later in the episode, there is the reference to all the doctors. So I think it works well, and I think with multi-narrative doctor stories, if they're all in at once, it gets a bit crowded. So I quite like the way that it took a while before you got all three of them working together. And because of the three fantastic actors, it really does work.
As much as I love the Five Doctors, there's a lot of chopping and changing, isn't there? There's a lot of unusual team-ups, sort of Tegan with the First Doctor, quite a few others in that story, but Moffat hasn't overly laden this with characters, has he? You know, there's certain references, like we have the unit notice board in the Black Archive, which we've seen used as a prop in the Doctor Who Experience, where you have a lot of the companions on there. There's nice little flourishes and touches throughout.
Yeah, I think it works because, you know, it's not too crowded. You know, the three Doctors together work really well, and there's these sort of great references to the Pertwee, with, like, you know, reducing the polarity on the sonic screwdrivers, and it doesn't work because they're all doing it at the same time. And I think sticking Clara with Gemma Redgrave's great Kate Stewart works really well.
Yes, I do think we should have a little chat about Night of the Doctor Owl. I've seen a few fans suggest in the past it probably would have been a wonderful pre-title sequence. Do you think that would have worked? I know they had to release it early because it was in danger of being leaked for some spectacular reason. For once in the new series era, they managed to keep it more or less a great secret. There were mumblings online about Paul McGann filming something new, but it was a whole week before the anniversary itself, I think, the previous Thursday of the week before, when it got released at 10 o'clock on a glorious Thursday morning, I think.
Yeah, it was. It was on that Thursday. I think that would be quite nice, but you know, if it would be part of the... I really like that, the Night of the Doctor, so I'm kicking the wrong title. It worked really well, that little Paul McGann, but I think it would have been great if you'd had that as an added-on bit to this episode, because I think this episode works very well, but I think that would have worked even better with that bit of, you know, Paul McGann turning into the War Doctor.
Very much the heroic Doctor at the start, isn't he? And he has this lady on a spaceship that's about to crash, and the character is called Cass, and he's trying to talk her out of or talk her into going into the TARDIS with him, and then she realizes he's a Time Lord, and we really see what sort of effect they've had on the universe in this time war, how they've become as bad as the Daleks in the eyes of some species.
Oh, most definitely, that great Night of the Doctor, which is only not that long at all before we get to the Day of the Doctor, works really well. And I love that because it had a really great reference to the whole Big Finish work, you know, the Doctor, include all his Big Finish companions he'd had. But I think it would have worked better if that would have been part of the actual 50th anniversary episode.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it, when we see him in the rubble, you see the spires from the TV movie, you know. I was always slightly disappointed they didn't go for a representation of the TV movie set. We could have seen one last time, but that was so vast, I guess it would have been very expensive to recreate.
Well, yeah, expensive. Well, I expect these days you do it quite... not cheap or fairly budget tight with CGI, I suppose, but it just, those sort of first shots of Gallifrey look superb in Day of the Doctor.
Oh yes, on today then, and we sort of see a mirror image at the end of the Night of the Doctor special of John Hurt saying, "Doctor no more." Are you surprised in the way McGann sort of turns into that War Doctor very quickly? Does it convince you? I think it convinced me more rewatching it now than it did at the time, because Paul seems such a almost gentle incarnation at times.
Yes and no, because I've listened to a lot of the Paul McGann Big Finish stuff, and he has become more grumpy related to the things what's happened to him. So yeah, at the time, yeah, I was like, yeah, I didn't slightly get him turning into the War Doctor from Paul McGann's Doctor, but watching it now, I think it does actually work.
Yes, and on to the main special itself, Night of the Doctor. Lovely intro opening. We got a brief few seconds of the original title sequence. Clara working at Coal Hill School. A wonderful shot reminiscent of the McGann TV movie of her motorbike going into the TARDIS and spinning. You really don't see the cut there, but it's so well done.
Yeah, there is a little cut. If you blink, you do see it, but it's really well shot, that whole bit. And the fact she glides in and closes the door, I think that is just when Gemma Coleman is coming really good as Clara.
Yes, and the references keep on coming then, don't we? We have the TARDIS clamped into the sky by unit, the phone call made to Kate Stewart. Kate Stewart noticing that, are they the crows or the pigeons around...
It's the ravens, it's the ravens.
The ravens are, sorry, yeah, the ravens, of course, yeah, around... Unit HQ and the Black Archive need new batteries, and she asks a character called Osgood to tell somebody called Malcolm to get the batteries put in again. And that was Malcolm, of course, from Planet of the Dead in the David Tennant era, played by Lee Evans, wasn't it, the comedian?
Yeah, very well played. I did enjoy it. Is that the first shot we have of Osgood? I don't think he was in that, was he, Planet of the Dead?
debut story for Osgood, and she's been back in a Zygon two-parter in the Capaldi era since then.
And another great thing of Big Finish, with the unit boxes, they've really made her character more than like just a 5-minute character. They've made her, you know, basically part of the unit team basically now.
Yeah, could we have done with a bit more unit in the Peter era, do you think?
I think, you know, because the way it's been really done well now with Gemma Redgrave as Kate Stewart, I think it really works. That's why it's got such a separate own standalone range at Big Finish, which is really great if you haven't listened to it. I think, yeah, because there wasn't a great deal of in the Capaldi era, was there? It was just, you know, in the recent era, there's just been this and the Chris Chignall episode where, you know, she was introduced, and a bit with, you know, Peter Capaldi here, really.
Yeah, but nice to get part of a great acting dynasty in Doctor Who. We met Gemma at Regeneration. She's done very few conventions, but she was a very interesting guest, wasn't she, last year?
Oh, yeah, she's a fantastic actress and, you know, really great. It's sort of her first, I think it was one of her first conventions she did at Regen. It was like, I've never done this before. She was so lovely and very helpful. You know, I got a really good photo of her.
The Doctor arrives rather spectacularly. A great, very cinematic setup and sequence for the way Matt Smith dropped in, and he actually did the stunt work himself, of course, didn't he? His hands were sort of strapped into the bottom of a TARDIS, and that shot works so well, the crane shot.
Yeah, there's some lovely shots in Trafalgar Square where they drop him in, that it's just really good, and that drops in and the soldiers sort of try and salute him and he doesn't like it.
Yeah, and of course Osgood has the Tom Baker scarf on, and he notices that, doesn't he?
Oh, immediately. You know, there's this lovely little references to Old Who in this episode, and it's so well done, but it's not really in your face, you know, it's sort of there, which I like, really.
And then we get the whole concept brought in of paintings, which I remember at the start of this anniversary year in 2013, Matt Smith was on, I think it was the Jonathan Ross show in the UK, and he said the only word he could say about the special spoilers was paintings. So, you know, such a clever idea, isn't it? I mean, I struggled sometimes with the cup of soup reference, but I just about got it on watching it on this rewatch this week.
Yeah, the whole cup of soup thing does take a little while to understand. Those paintings, have you ever drawn them, animated in the 3D? They're just stunning when you look at them. There's just so much going on in them. They're beautiful, really.
Yes, and we discover that the Doctor was bequeathed this gift.
Bequeathed?
Yeah, bequeathed. I can't say it. Bequeathed. This gift by Elizabeth I, and we have a flashback to David Tennant in a story that was semi-referenced at the start of his final two-part at the End of Time.
Oh yeah, it is a reference, right? Yeah, and it's like, you know, we've had a bit of seriousness because, you know, Matt Smith with the paintings is quite dark. You go this lavish sort of quite fun bit with David Tennant. It is hilarious,
and we get the controversy of Elizabeth I with a slight Swansea accent of Joanna Page, who is my age. I went to a different school, but we used to frequent the same nightclubs together at the same time back in the 90s. Apparently, I don't remember. I don't know her, but
well, I think that slightly works, that accent. It's not annoying. It's like, you know, she would have gone to places, so the accent might have creeped in. Well, I think it's quite funny because of Joanna Page. It's brilliant at comedy.
And it wasn't one of my best efforts at set reporting, folks, when I dragged up there April 2013. I jumped up a huge bank to find the little castle turret where they go into, and managed to get a very blurry picture of David Tennant in his suit on my phone.
It wasn't great. I've seen that one. I think it isn't great.
No, but they did release the picture of the Zygon, which were David Tennant's favourite monsters growing up, and the ones he always wanted to return, and he got this wish.
Well, they do look, I think they look better in this than they did back in the day. I love the Tom Baker Zygon episode. It's like, they look a bit more menacing in this episode, I think.
Yes, and in amongst the lightness of these Tennant scenes and the Smith and Clara scenes, we get the War Doctor, don't we? We get the very sort of other side.
Oh, well, definitely. You've got the whole, you know, where he's walking into a barn and it's sandy and it's dusty and he looks dishevelled and it's the amazingly great John Hurt. It's just things John Hurt could do, where, you know, just little looks and little growls in his voice, and it just makes you feel what this guy's been through hell, basically.
Yes, I think David Tennant and Matt Smith both joked, didn't they? You know, they spent hours preparing their facial looks and the intonation in their voices, and turned around and John Hurt could do these things with one little look.
it's just so amazing. He was, you could do it with just like one little thing of his eye or one little bit of his voice, and it just tells you so much. And there's some beautiful scenes later on where he's having tea with Clara, and there's some really beautiful details. And it's just a shame he's not around any longer.
Yes, such a sad loss earlier this year. And we have the reintroduction of Billie Piper to the Doctor Who universe. I think she puts in a brilliant performance in this. You know, she really brings in elements of Rose Tyler to the moment, and the moment itself is such a well thought out concept. You know, having a weapon of this magnitude, it would need to be sentient.
Oh, definitely. Because I think everybody thought that she was just coming back as Rose Tyler, and they did this great thing of making her the moment, and making her the whole thing that only the War Doctor can see and hear, and it just works so well.
And I think in the concept of this story, when the time fissures open between the three Doctors, and they both end up in medieval England, all three of them do, John Hurt shows how well he can do comedy then as well, doesn't he? It becomes a little bit pantomime for probably a 5-10 minute section then, but he sells it with so much experience and gravitas.
Yeah, but I think that really works, because it's very funny, but you've had quite a bit of darkness beforehand, so I think you need that sort of lightness where they're all stuck in the dungeon, they spend hours trying to get the door open, and the great joke is that, you know, it's not locked.
Yes, and Stephen Moffat, of course, mentioned this, that he brings in sort of elements. He does represent the older Doctors, doesn't he? And there's definitely shades of a lot of them in his performance.
Oh, definitely. There's definitely more darkness, and luckily before he died, we got the four great War Doctor box sets at Big Finish, which are really dark and really great. But it's just a really good performance, and it has all the elements of Tom and Colin and Sylvester in his performance, I think.
Onto a little bit of darkness again, the moralising within the prison cell. You know, we have this line from Bad Wolf Girl, played by Billie Piper, saying, one of the Doctors, David Tennant, is the one that regrets, and Matt Smith is the one who forgets. Did you appreciate all that, how that was played? Did you think that was a little bit off from the character of the Doctor, that he would actually forget, apparently, having done these things, although we do see they're unravelled by the end of the episode?
I think it's just the way that different Doctors react, and I think that scene's great when John Hurt's got to go, do you remember how many people died, and he won't admit, and then David Tennant knows exactly how many died, and it's sort of, I think it's more relating to the individual Doctor, and that comes out in people like the difference between Colin and Sylvester's performances in the past. It's that callousness, I think, of travelling and trying not to take all the thing. Well, as we know, by the end of the episode he completely turned into the normal sort of Doctor and outlook of things.
How do you feel this may have been played if Chris Eccleston had been persuaded to appear in the special? We know that Stephen Moffat had, I think, two meetings with him, but Chris politely declined.
Yeah, that would be really interesting, but the thing is, if you got Christopher Eccleston, do you think you would have got John Hurt as the War Doctor? That's the whole thing, because I think they would have just used Christopher Eccleston for the whole moment stuff on Gallifrey and all that. But I think it would be maybe darker if you had Christopher Eccleston, because he can do really dark.
I mean, it's the whole issue we had with the Five Doctors of whether you'd want to have Tom Baker or not. I think it just works. The Five Doctors definitely works for me as an episode, and The Day of the Doctor works rather spectacularly with John Hurt.
If you could have done, I would have liked Christopher Eccleston, but as a second idea, John Hurt is fantastic.
Perhaps as a counterbalance, the regeneration scene at the end where we see Christopher Eccleston's eyes appear, perhaps it could have regenerated and he could have just come back for one line. That would have been a nice little shout, perhaps to see the first line that his Doctor spoke.
Yeah, that would have been nice, a bit where it sort of cuts away very quickly, doesn't it, from John Hurt regenerating. I think that would have been really nice if you'd seen Christopher Eccleston there, maybe just saying one line or something like that. That would have been great.
So we find out, I think, as we're following the story, Al, that the Zygons have captured this piece of Time Lord art and want to hide within it. And we get a nice callback to a character called McGillock getting a phone call from the Doctor earlier on, a bit of timey-wiminess there.
Oh yes, the sort of moving the picture to the black archive so they can jump out of it later. I love that bit where he does use all that new language, and John Hurt's Doctor goes, can you actually speak English?
Yeah, do you think it's made clear, I probably did concentrate a little bit more in this bit of research this week, Al, which Zygon is Osgood and which is Kate Stewart?
I
That's a really interesting thing, because what we know from, you know, Abba Saigon episode we had now with you there, doesn't really come over very clearly which one is Kate Stewart and which one is Osgood. But I wondered, is the other Osgood sort of briefly mentioned in this episode?
No, because we see her falling over, don't we? And she picks up the asthma pump, yeah, and then gives it back to the other one again afterwards. So that sets up the mystery for the Saigon inversion and invasion we've seen in the Capaldi era.
It's interesting to see what with the whole Osgood thing, Big Finish haven't mentioned anything like to do with the Saigon invasion yet.
As we move towards the denouement of the story, we have the three Time Lords themselves getting into the Gallifreyan situation, into the painting. Is that made clear? Do they actually travel there by TARDIS? Although I think Gallifrey is time locked, or do they walk through the painting themselves?
I was only asking about it, I'm not 100% sure, because they've all got the TARDISes when they move Galaxy, you know, when they move Gallifrey to the, you know, the other pinpoint dimension, but I don't think they have them for that bit. I think they do just go through the painting, I think.
Yes, we see them in the middle of a war zone, and they end up in that now famous barn, which we've also seen in the Capaldi era. All three TARDISes there, and we get lovely references to Terence Dix. We have the Bad Wolf girl, played by Billy, saying, you know, you hear that sound, that wheezing, groaning sound, which Terence sort of christened, didn't he, in the Target books, and she says that brings hope. And it's up to her and then Clara to change the whole mind of the Doctor, isn't it, about how he can save this?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Those sort of tweaks back to old days, always really good, and it's sort of that sort of issue of hope there. And, you know, Billy Piper's The Moment's really good in that bit, I think.
And that slight tinge of sadness when David Tennant's Doctor hears John Hurt say, oh, Bad Wolf Girl told me to do this. And he says, did you say Bad Wolf Girl? You know, he could have had that reunion with what was a representation of Rose, but he didn't get to have it in the end.
No. Well, there is that great bit of, you know, sadness wanting Rose that I think David Tennant Doctor does, definitely. It would have been nice if they brought her back as maybe Rose then, was he just as The Moment. And it's like, she sort of is Rose, or she isn't. It's a really good way that what Billy Piper plays The Moment, I think.
Yes, and then we get to the grand denouement, which has spawned quite a few excellent fan-made editions online of all 13 Doctors, sir. We got the debut of Peter Capaldi's eyebrows, of course. Do you remember being tremendously excited by that at the time?
Oh, well, I think that there's two moments in this episode when I first watched it on the anniversary that made me very excited. And one would discuss me, well, it's just seeing those, knowing by then it was going to be Peter Capaldi, and sort of eyebrows and seeing the eyes, it's like, oh, this is going to be good, and it has been good. And then the creator bit at the end, that was the two bits that really I got excited by in this.
Yes, I mean, we have the William Hartnell voice recreation, don't we? I think they managed to use dialogue from the other Doctors, all the other ones anyway. Tim Treloar doesn't always get the first Doctor for me, but it works fine in this context.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think John Coleshaw is better than Tim Treloar at John Pertwee's Doctor. Like, that's why I don't think I've brought any of the Big Finish third Doctor box sets, because I think it goes a bit up and down sometimes.
I think they did actually use Pertwee, Al. I think Tim Treloar just did the first Doctor.
I did the first Doctor. Well, that's actually pretty good, the first Doctor one is.
Characters are they? The War Counsellors, played by an actor called Ken Bones, who then returned in, was it Hellbent or Heaven Sent?
I think it's the first one, which is Hellbent, isn't it?
Yes, and then we get them meeting up again in the Undergallery. John Hurt using his great wit again, saying, I wish I could be half the man you were, Clara Oswald.
Yeah, it's a great bit there. That sort of end bit's great, because it's sort of saying goodbye, and there's like references, David Tennant does his sort of saying goodbyes when he regenerated. And I love that bit where Matt Smith goes, he always does that. And it's just very nice, and then that really, you don't see it coming, that really fantastic bit at the end with the caretaker.
You know, I really think you might.
I can notice with the sound editing on that, or just Tom's delivery, you can never actually be prepared for it. No matter how many times you look for it, you can count. How are they counting this in you? And Tom just comes in, doesn't he?
I'm totally with you, though, because I knew it was coming, And yeah. I was sitting there, and it still did the same sort of jump when I watched it the first time.
Talk about this week. In light of spoilers, folks, there's a new release of Shada that has come out this week, and Tom has filmed an episode on 1970s cameras back in his Doctor's costume, which fits in with the last lines written by Douglas Adams for that story. A few fans pointed out that Tom looks quite frantic and nervous and a little bit scared, perhaps, as back as the Doctor towards the end of that scene, where he's informing Matt that Gallifrey still exists somewhere. But he looks a lot happier in this version of Shada, and I think that's made quite a nice bookend now for this appearance as the Curator.
I think it's because when he did the caretaker for this one, he was just starting to agree in his head that he was going to do his Doctor again. I think Big Finish just started their reigns, didn't they, around then, of the Fourth Doctor thing. He was just getting his head around being the Doctor again. I think, you know, now he's been doing it for quite a few years now again, and he's got back into it, and then I think he looks a lot more relaxed in that clip I've seen, the new clips I've seen from Shada, definitely.
That's also because he's back in the proper costume this time. I think somebody suggested he refused to wear a Doctor's costume to come back for Day.
I think at the Day of the Doctor he was still in that sort of prickly the Five Doctors situation, but I think due to Big Finish, you know, showing him how loved his Fourth Doctor is, that he has now got completely back into it, I think.
Really just enjoyable performance, isn't it? It really just surges through you, the joy when you see him back.
Oh, it's just lovely. It's sort of ridiculous. I don't know, I watched it again. It gave me the same sort of feeling when I watched it the first time, that sort of, you know, it's the Doctor, and it's like, you know it, and Matt Smith knows, and it sort of gives you that, it does get pretty dark this episode, and it gives you that sort of hope that there is something out there, Gallifrey is still there.
On the new Shada, sorry, spoilers again, folks, Tom says the line in the old costume, with the white hair as he looks nowadays, round his TARDIS console, that he wonders what somebody might say about him in 200 years' time, whether they'll wonder, was that nice old man the Doctor? And that really resonated with me as perhaps being something Clara might say in an off-screen scene, just after they leave the gallery.
Definitely. I think that really would be the sort of things you would say. And I really think that sort of, you get that bit and you get the sort of music with Matt talking over it. I think that's a really nice ending, really.
Yeah, dream sequence of power. Yeah, it's never made clear by anybody, but it has been discussed by Moffat and others that that is actually a dream sequence at the end.
I thought it might be, because he is talking about dreaming, so I thought it might be a dream sequence.
So, yes, thoroughly all-round great episode, Al. I think probably one of my favourites ever, too, certainly of the new Who era, and it's got to be a hit for me, really.
It's a hit for me as well, basically, because it just works. Every element, there isn't a bit, I think I watched it in full, and there isn't a bit where I wasn't interested, I wasn't entertained, and I didn't find the bit sort of funny, and I think it works, and it's got nice monsters, and it just really works. It's definitely a hit for me, and I can understand why everybody thought it was a hit out of those four we gave us that poll, really.
And a great logistical effort to get it in the cinemas all around the world broadcast at the same time.
Well, do you think I don't think it is the same time. That was a really good idea at the time, but I don't think, and then they're going to try and do it with Twice Upon a Time, aren't they? But I think it's at different times around the world.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is Who's News. This is Alex, and it's the 26th of November. And the first thing we've got to mention is the re-release of Shada, Tom Baker episodes that have now added a brilliant new end bit to it due to not ever being finished due to the strike back in the late 70s. This version of Shada is coming out on a beautiful limited edition steel book. It has all the extras plus the new stuff, and it's coming out on December the 4th. On Blu-ray and DVD, but I think it's only the Blu-ray what has the Steelbook edition. Well, if you want to know what's been going on with the final episode of Doctor Who for Christmas of Peter Capaldi's era, then you can find out everything in an Access All Areas interview with Joe Wiley on the 21st of December, 8 p.m. on Radio 2. Very interesting, as she was there for his last scenes And also for Jodie Whittaker's, from bigfinish.com this week, we've had Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor, Volume 2. There is a special edition out at the moment for download and CD, which has lots of new interviews. It has the great David Tennant, and for the first time for bigfinish.com, we have Billy Piper back as Rose. And also we have Jackie Tyler in it as well, played by Camille Cordiori. It includes Ice Warriors and lots of new fun monsters. If you're a fan of Big Finish's Sherlock Holmes box sets they've had over the last couple of years, which are always fantastic with Nick Briggs playing the great Sherlock Holmes, then like me, you'll be interested to know, but there's a new box set coming out in March 2018, and I think there's also something nice and festive coming from them as a download. Not sure that they've released the title yet, for Sherlock Holmes lovers at Christmas. So, we now must discuss The Mist. So, what is The Mist, Mike, and what do you think of it?
The Mist for this week in the Moffat era is the Husbands of Riversong Christmas special from 2015, directed by Douglas MacKinnon. Any teaser thoughts for you on overall on this one, Al?
Well, it's a very interesting one and slightly annoying, because in one way it has a lot of good points, and in the other way it has a lot of things that you sit there and think, why on earth is that there? That's not very funny and it doesn't really work.
Got to admit, Al, really wasn't a fan of this at the time. Not really sure why, it just didn't appeal to me. Some Christmas specials have, a lot of them I haven't looked forward to, a lot of them I have been disappointed with. But to be honest, as with quite a few of these Christmas specials, on a rewatch, I found more things to enjoy about it. I'll let you know whether I think it's gone from a hit to a miss or somewhere in the middle, towards the end of this discussion. But there were certainly things which I picked up on this time which I enjoyed more.
Yeah, it's like, I think this feel the same with it. There is bits what I really enjoyed from it, but then there's a lot of, why on earth's that there? You know, you could have got, you know, to the point faster, and you could have had more great dialogue between Alex Kingston and Peter Capaldi, because I think those two characters work really well together.
Right into the story, we start off seeing a flying saucer on a planet, the TARDIS landing in a very sort of Christmassy looking village. Straight in with a lot of humour, we have a friend of the show's first appearance, Matt Lucas as Nardole, and Greg Davies shortly afterwards. A lot of spiky Moffat comedy dialogue between those two.
Yeah, the sort of bits with the great Matt Lucas Nardole, it work well. I think he does have good bits in it, but I just don't get the whole, you know, Greg Davies is a great comedian, I do like his stuff, but it's like, you know, why did you need the whole husband thing to get to the point of the diamond robbery? That was my main complaint.
It's just a little bit pantomime, isn't it? The whole idea of a robot, you know, you got those large robot suits which are so reminiscent of the Chibnall story, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, and there was another couple of robots of that distinction in the Sarah Jane Adventures, I think, Al.
Yeah, I think there was. There've been a couple. I think they just don't seem to do much. Or I think that, you know, the whole head changing was quite fun, but it's just sort of, I'd have been quite happy if it had been more like the other heist story in the Peter Capaldi movie, you know, where they have to rob the bank. That element of heist really worked.
Oh, time heist, that one was.
Time heist, that's it, yeah, time heist. That sort of element of heist really worked very well, because it was tight. Where this is like, oh, it's the diamonds in his head, so you've got the chop of his head and all this sort of stuff. But why on earth is that there?
Do you think Alex Kingston River possibly overplays the fact that she doesn't know the Doctor, first of all?
Yes, to be honest, because, you know, she sort of, I don't know how you get around not knowing. No, it's completely, because he's older than the ones she knew, but it's like, you'd know, there'd be something what you'd know instantly, and there's sort of like a good 10, about a good 20 minutes where he doesn't know he's the Doctor and pretends he isn't the Doctor.
We have Greg Davies, as we just mentioned, as Hydroflax. I think he's really going for it in this one, isn't he? You know, it tends to be almost overacting as a part of his routine anyway, if we see in a superb series that he writes himself called Man Down.
Yeah, that is really fun. That is a great super. It's very funny. But it's sort of Greg Davies on manic Greg Davies, and I don't know if it quite works.
Yeah, and there's a little interesting tidbit about the Doctor being known as the damsel in this story, isn't he? You know, and called the damsel in distress, and that, of course, puts you in mind of that awful 1980s record.
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't think, yeah, that is not good. It's like, why on earth would the Doctor be known as the damsel? That's another thing. He'd never be that sort of character. And there's sort of little things really annoy me. Well, he does sort of pick up halfway through, thanks to Peter Capaldi's performance, basically, and Alex Kingston's performance gets better and better throughout, I think.
Yeah, and we have the whole plot of the diamond being within Hydroflax's head.
I know, I just don't think if that really, really works. I think, you know, if you got rid of all that bit and made a heist for diamond sort of thing, that would work better, I think.
I mean, it's done relatively tastefully, you know. This is a show for all the family on Christmas days, and you have the idea of decapitation, of course, but we don't see a great deal of it, which is a good thing.
I know. I know when I watched it, when we watched it, you know, Christmas Day the first time in our house, I had to go upstairs because my mum wasn't a fan of the whole exploding head bit, I think. Well, it's done not too untastefully, I think.
And, of course, we get poor old Matt. Poor old Nardole is decapitated and put into this horrific comedy robot suit.
I know. I'm wondering, was that ever explained in the recent Christmas episode, how he gets from the suit to his actual own body?
No, I can't remember if it was actually sort of mentioned in the Return of Dr. Mysterio or the pilot, yeah.
It's a weird one. They've never mentioned he's sort of in the Nardole body by the time we see him in Dr. Mysterio, and it's like, well, how did you get from there to there?
But you do get the elements of Nardole's past throughout the series, don't you, saying, oh, I used to be blue once in oxygen, so he's obviously had a pretty varied life, shall we say.
But I think even in the bits what he's in, Matt is just very funny. I find the bits he's in very funny in that, in Husbands of River Song.
Yeah, we're found him a bit unfair to him, because when we mentioned him, when we interviewed Matt, episode 36, folks, if you go back and find it, he did mention that a lot of fans weren't happy about him returning, but we saw a great deal of depth put into his character in series 10.
I personally thought he was really good, even before we met him. He's a really nice person, but I think, you know, I really enjoyed him, as I thought he actually lent something to this awful, I thought it was awful at the time. I don't think it's awful now. I think it's watchable, but at the time I thought it was really dreadful, and I think the bits I liked were the Matt Lucas bits.
Well, I mean, was it a total sea change, perhaps, after we had the whole drama of the Doctor losing Clara and being made to forget her? This took a total comedy turn, didn't it? You know, well, particularly early on in the episode, it does become a little bit more emotionally dark towards the end.
Yeah, I think it needed it, to be honest, because we had I think it's called Last Christmas, the one before this, and it's so, it wasn't my best Christmas, because my dad dying, unfortunately, but it was like really, really dark, that Last Christmas. And then I think there are some dark bits in this, but there's some quite funny and light bits. I think it's what you really want on Christmas Day.
Yes, and we talked about Nardole decapitated, and then we sort of see the elements of one of my very favourite things about this story, which is the Doctor putting himself in the assistant role. And you get that wonderful scene of Peter getting excited about being the one to say that TARDIS is bigger on the inside, and he really goes for it in that scene.
Oh, that is just great, the way he goes into the TARDIS, and, you know, it's completely over the top about it being bigger than the bigger in the inside and outside. It's just brilliant, that scene.
And at this point, you know, River still isn't seeing through him, because he's mentioning things about the TARDIS and saying, oh, how do you know that? How do you know this?
I'm just very intelligent.
And then shortly after, we end up in a very bizarre sort of hotel, which seems to be exclusively for genocide perpetrators. What did you make of that, Al?
It's a very weird hotel, isn't it? It's like, oh, it's full of people who are basically the most nastiest of the nasty. You can just see, like, Robert Mugabe ending up there in real life. It's sort of the worst of the worst people, basically, that is there to, you know, to bid for this diamond. It's a horrific idea, but quite fun.
What are we now, folks? 4 days past Mugabe being disposed, and he still hasn't given those missing episodes back.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, there's something to get into his archive pronto.
Probably, sadly, not on the priority list of politicians in the country. No. But you know, we can only hope.
We can hope something. Now, BBC are allowed in Zimbabwe. We can hope somebody gets to that archive and raids it.
We're joking, folks. Please don't complain. We're joking.
No, we are joking.
And then, of course, we get what we just spoke about—the Hydroflax death. Slight comedy element to it. Also a bit of sort of liquid explosion there, Al, isn't it? That's probably a little bit over the top for Christmas Day family viewing.
Yeah, there was a little bit nasty, a little bit of gunk, and children love gunk and explosions, so I'm sure they were perfectly happy. It was just the screamy adults who probably weren't very happy with that.
And then we understand River has this very expensive diamond for sale, and the tables are turned on her by getting hold of her diary, of course. And we get some lovely references to the old adventures, the crash of the Byzantium, the idea of Jim the Fish.
Yeah, it's just lovely, though. I mean, once you get to that horrible hotel, the pace goes up and it just gets better and better, I think. That's why I don't think it's awful now, because there are some fantastic scenes between Peter Capaldi and Alex Kingston in this.
And it builds up to Capaldi saying, "Hey, sweetie," of course, and that's the moment of realisation for River.
Definitely, definitely. And she works it out from there that it's him, and it's just a... Again, she's one of these actresses who can just do something with a look. They both can, and it's all that look at him going, "Ah, it is the Doctor."
Yes, and then we discover that River has been planning for a crash. They do like to do a lot of thinking ahead, these people who travel in the TARDIS, don't they, with a Doctor?
Oh, definitely, definitely. You have to keep your head going with this episode, because it does move pretty fast in some bits.
And then we have the whole domestic argument about all the people that the Doctor has apparently married. Elizabeth I, as we just spoke about in Day of the Doctor. The Doctor mentions Stephen Fry, apparently, but is that meant to be he has married Stephen Fry or River has? We don't know.
We don't know. It's an interesting reference, isn't it? It's like, just because Stephen Fry is a mammoth Doctor Who fan, I think they slipped that in.
We have the crash happening on Deryllium, funnily enough, which leads us up to the end of the story then.
Oh, yes, that the great bit with the restaurant. Well, I was just thinking, because of Sharda being out, there is a Douglas Adams book connected to his Hitchhikers series, which is called The Restaurant at the End of the World.
Ah, so, yeah, that's an Adams reference in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, with that bit where you've got the restaurant, Deryllium, and it's only there for so many times. I think that those scenes are lovely, and that's a very nice suit that they give Peter Capaldi.
But as the hotel is crashing, we get a wonderful scene of the TARDIS materialising and rematerialising around itself, don't we? Around River.
Yeah,
and then around
really
the Doctor.
Good, there's some really good special effects when that hotel is sort of crashing.
Oh, I think the CGI really is good in this special.
There is some really good bits when that hotel sort of starts disintegrating and then it sort of falls around. There's some really good CGI and special effects done in this, definitely. That's what sort of brings it up a bit from being terrible to not bad, I think.
And then we have the TARDIS landing within the ship this time. Elements of Night of the Doctor as well, of course, but this time it stays in one piece. But we get the spectacular shot by Doug McKinnon of Capaldi's Doctor and River being blown off from the doors, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, that's a really nice sort of shot. Must have taken hours to do. It's a really beautiful one. I think all the shots of Deryllium are really stunningly shot.
And we see the famous Singing Towers reference before, of course, right back in Silence in the Library, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. They just make that last couple sort of scenes with the towers and the sort of singing are beautiful, really.
And the Doctor conveniently mentions that it would be nice if they built a restaurant here. And the workman he speaks to conveniently gets a diamond, which the Doctor just happens to have in his possession from earlier in the story.
I know it's a very sort of in some way convenient, but it's sort of a nice cleaning up of all the sort of elements you've had, because you've got an awful lot of stuff going on in this episode. So in a way it's very sort of cheesy, but it's sort of good, I think.
And yeah, we get a scene then at the end which sort of raises the story for me. I'm probably going to move away from a total mess out to somewhere in the middle, not quite a hit, but one...
Yeah, that if you're on about that final scene between him and River, that's what does really pick out from being annoyingly bad to pretty good.
And the use of the word spoilers again, of course, which we've just seen in the Christmas special clip released by Children in Need BBC last week.
Oh, yeah, that's some great little bits there.
Yes. So, Husbands of River Song, Al. I'm not going to call it a total miss as my score. I'm going to say it just meddles in between now. It's not a hit for me by any means. I'd want to go and rewatch, but I did enjoy it. There's only the second time I've seen it for the research, and it finished quite low in our poll. That's why we chose to discuss it this episode. A middling episode for me, not the worst, not the very best.
Yeah, I would agree. It's sort of in the middle. It's not a complete miss for me, because I think there are things that are worth watching for, like Peter's and Alex's performances. In some bits are really, really good. That last bit, like right at the end, it is worth waiting for, because it's really well shot and it's beautifully act by both of them. So it's a middle, I wouldn't say it's a hit, because it has lots of stuff I'd like to get rid of personally and make it a little bit shorter. But I think it's worth a second watch, I think.
Yes, absolutely agree, Al. On to Who's News this week. Quite a bit, Al, since our last episode anyway. We've had the lovely clip on Children in Need from Twice Upon a Time. What did you make of it? What did you make of David Bradley playing the First Doctor this time rather than William Hartnell in particular?
I think from that clip we're in for something really special, I think, on Christmas Day, because it was just really well, you know, they're really having that sort of battle of the two doctors like they always do when they have like multi doctors. It really fun, that sort of 5 minute clip we got on Till the Knee was really good. And I think, you know, the whole character Mark Gatiss is playing looks really good as well. So I think it's just, in some ways I'd like it before Christmas, because I never really concentrate it on the whole of it when it's on Christmas Day, because I'm normally too drunk by then. But I do record it and I'll watch it at home, and I bet it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, comedy and a few poignant moments in that scene as well. Well, one in particular when Capaldi is speaking to the Mark Gatiss character, saying, "You're a World War One soldier," and he says, "What? You said one World War One," and obviously you wouldn't know in that really situation. Good. And is it a little bit flippant that he just sort of says spoilers at the time? I think the First Doctor then interrupts them fairly quickly.
Yeah, it's sort of not what I'd say, and I like the fact, you know, the way he works out that he's the Doctor, and the fact his hands are regenerating a lot through it.
Yes, I think that's been established more or less if we discussed it in our Day of the Doctor discussion earlier in the episode, Al, that the incarnation only realises these things are happening while they're happening, if you know what I mean, the earlier one anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I like the fact that, you know, nearly through that whole scene his hands are sort of glowing continuously off and on, really. So it's going to be a sort of gradual regen. And we've heard rumors, do you think it's going to be like sort of pretty similar to how they did between Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi?
Well, I want to know if it will be the crashing TARDIS again, Al. That seems to be
that's what I meant, yeah, the crashing TARDIS of him, because, you know, there's rumors it goes into water, doesn't it?
Yeah, quite possibly. We've seen filming up on a rig. Onto that sort of news, Al. Spoilers again. Jodie has been filming in Sheffield. They've gone on location this week and announced yesterday that two of the companions, anyway, were set to film in South Africa next month. In January, after the Christmas break in production.
Wow, I haven't seen that. So we're going very multi-global with these stories then.
Yeah, a lot of excitement about the scope Chris Chibnall is going for. You know, perhaps the fact he only has 10 episodes to fill allows him to travel a bit more. You know, if it keeps filming more secretive, we had a few pictures from Sheffield, then so much the better.
Well, yeah, I think I know a lot of people are going, it's only 10 episodes, but everybody always complains when you get something like on Netflix, like the Punisher or Daredevil, the same sort of thing, where it's 13, they always say that's too long. So I think 10 is going to be about right, because I think the thing these days with sci-fi is either 8 or 13, so I think 10 is nicely in the middle.
And you have to think, Al, there's going to be a lot less filler episodes too, isn't there? You know, we don't know if the format's going to have a overall arc like the Bad Wolf days, or it's going to be more serialised, which is rumoured.
Well, that would be nice, because I think I looked at a thing recently. I went through all the most recent series, and each series does have about 2 or 3 filler episodes, so I think if you can get it tighter with 10, it will be better.
Yes, we did mention in the news, folks, 2 departures this week. Murray Gold is going to be leaving Doctor Who after...
You've answered my question.
...being there since 2005, so who will be next for composing, Al?
That's what I wondered, because I've been looking everywhere, because we knew Murray was going. I haven't seen any announcement. I want it to be the guy who does the Torchwood music for Big Finish, because he's really good.
Ah, I can't think of his name, Al, but...
No, come on, he did a thing recently for Radio 4, which was like, for Halloween, it was like the Bride of Dracula thing, and it was really, really orchestral. He's done loads. I think it's Ben something. Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Ben Foster? Not Ben Foster.
That's it.
Oh, it is Ben Foster. Yeah, he's done a lot of the live gigs, hasn't he? The proms and the various celebration concerts.
Yeah, he's still not involved. Like, he's done a lot of stuff for the whole Torture Brains at Big Finish.
I mean, do we need one for whole series, or do you think they could sort of mix it up again as they do with writers? Because we also have Edmund Butt, who did the superb score for An Adventure in Space and Time in the 50th anniversary year.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, it'd be really nice because there's some really good composers at Big Finity. So they've got Howard Cartle, who does all the John. I think it's him who does all the Jack Reacher soundtracks, and that. It'd be really nice to have him maybe doing more.
Murray has possibly been a bit derivative of himself recently because he's been in the job for so long, probably more than any composer in any TV series, to be honest, in history.
Yeah, probably true, because, if you don't take Hans Zimmer into account, season 9 did feel like he was just reprising a lot of stuff.
But, you know, saying that, think of all the spectacular ones he's given us. The Great Tennant Fanfare, the Doctor Forever, the Great 11th Doctor theme, the 12th Doctor theme, the Rose theme, the Martha theme. They're just rolling off the tongue. He is the modern Dudley Simpson, who we sadly lost a few weeks ago.
I think all his stuff has been brilliant. If you got the box set they brought out around the 50th anniversary, which has got all his stuff on one disc, there is not a bad bit at all.
Absolutely, Al. And also announced this week, stepping down as being brand manager since 2005. Ed Russell. We thank Ed for all his hard work in getting Doctor Who out there, publicity-wise.
Yeah, that's interesting, because is that the rumoured job that Tom Spilsbury was meant to be getting?
We shall have to wait and see, shouldn't we? You know, we can't influence these things. We're just mere fans, listeners. But, you know, I think Tom would be a great choice if that's going to happen. But, you know, thank you to Ed for all his hard work. I've seen him at a few events. Thoroughly nice man.
Definitely, he's very nice. I think we have both met him. He's very helpful. And then you think under him, it's due to the fact that Doctor Who is as big, you know, worldwide and brand-wise as it is now, really.
Yeah, you know, think of the world tours, the tours within Britain. You know, I think they went round a few primary schools when Matt took over, didn't they, and showed the 11th Hour, just from the smaller scale events to the larger ones. You know, the screenings in New York, the screenings in, you know, I think Mexico City, wasn't it, Rio, on the world tour.
All the planning and the sort of, you know, getting those to work, and they all did work brilliantly. You have to think the hours that takes. So well done for what he's done, and it'll be interesting to see who takes over.
You know, logistically getting it in the cinemas around the world must have been a hell of a lot of work for him and his teams.
Yeah, because all the different sort of, you know, film companies you have to talk to, you know, it's not the same company runs each cinema, so there's nightmare hours of sort of communication. It's great what he's done. So, but we'll be into a new era, and that's the whole thing with the Jodie period. Don't have your old concepts of Doctor Who, I think, is the best way of saying it, because it's going to be different.
Sometimes a clean broom is just the way to do it. And, you know, part of me does wish, you know, Capaldi has stayed on under another showrunner, but I'm just delighted we got the first female Doctor, and she's a cracking, beautiful actress.
Yeah. I'm like you. I have this one little niggle that I would have loved to seen Capaldi under Chignall, but you got the next best thing with Jodie Whittaker. She is fantastic, and we're not just saying that because, you know, we're saying it's a woman. It has to be a woman. It doesn't have to be a woman, but she is a fantastic actress, and it's in very good hands with Chris Chignall's team, which seem to be most parts of his Broadchurch team. He set up with Broadchurch, so I think it's going to be pretty good.
Excellent, Al. So next time we are looking at our top and bottom of the polls we ran on Twitter, Moffat era stories. I don't think we'll tease this time. Should we make sure we just announce it as we do them next time? Yeah. So thank you for listening today, faithful listeners. See you soon.
See you soon. Bye.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files, we'll be discussing two more Stephen Moffat-era Doctor Who stories in the second part of our Hit and Miss specials.
You can contact us, of course, at DW Target Files on Twitter, Doctor Who Target Files Podcast on Facebook.
Doctor Who Target Files. Stephen Moffat, Hit or Miss, Day of the Doctor, and the Husbands of River Song special featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. Newsround opening and closing themes, composed originally by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and by John Baker. 12th Doctor theme, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by YouTube channel Veil Mystery. Please do check out their work, VAYLE Mystery Channel. Doctor Who Target Files. Stephen Moffat, Hit or Miss Review. Was recorded in Swansea, Wales, UK, and Exeter, Devon, England, UK, during November 2017.